Well, welcome back, everyone. Today is the fourth session of our five-week series on Let It Be, Mother Mary Comes to Me, Speaking Words of Wisdom. Our first week, we looked at the role of Mary in salvation history. Then we looked at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Last week, we talked primarily about Our Lady of Lourdes, but we also looked at her appearance to St. Catherine Labouré at Rue de Bach and her giving of the miraculous medal. Today, we're talking about Our Lady of Fatima. And this is the biggie. This is the big one. It is not a mistake to say that all of the apparitions of the Blessed Mother before Fatima were preparation for Fatima. And that all of the apparitions that have taken place since Fatima are simply a playing out of what took place at Fatima. I would say it is not also an exaggeration to say that Mary's appearance at Fatima was the most important spiritual event of the 20th century. And we're going to see why as we go through it. Why I would say something that dramatic and mean it with all my heart. As we approach this, we have to understand these apparitions took place. The first apparitions actually were three apparitions of an angel, and they took place in 1916. The apparitions of the Blessed Mother took place in 1917. But we have to understand kind of what's going on in the world before we begin to address these apparitions. Again, when you look at the other apparitions leading up to this point, well, Mexico, it was really about the Mexican people. But when you think about Lourdes, you think about Rue de Bach, it was very personal, it was very private in terms of relationship. But here, Mary has come for the sake of the world. She really has come in order to bring a message of salvation, a message of hope, a message of a call to conversion that is intended for the world. And in 1917, when she appears, there are events that are going on that are going to shape the rest of the 20th century. First of all, World War I is continuing. World War I started in 1914, and people hoped when it first started, as they hoped with every war, that it was going to be a fairly short war. It was not. It was a long war, and it was an incredibly bloody war. Over 20 million people will be killed in the war itself. There will be many others, millions, who are going to be killed as kind of a consequence of all of the turmoil that takes place there in Europe during this time, and is going on and on and on. At the time of the apparitions, Europe is just simply war weary. They are exhausted. They are tired. There are families who have not seen their husbands. They have not seen their sons for years. They have been out fighting these battles. And again, millions who have lost loved ones in this war. So they are absolutely exhausted. That is part of what is going on that the Blessed Mother is going to address as she appears there in Fatima. Another thing that's going on in Russia in 1917 is the Bolshevik Revolution. Joseph Lenin is leading that. It is not, at the time of these apparitions, it has not yet been completely successful. But they are in the process of overthrowing the Tsar and of establishing the first nation in the world that is a communist nation. And who would expect that these three little kids living in Fatima, Portugal, this little village, would have any idea about what is going on? And who could have guessed? Who could have guessed? Even the people of the time, who could have guessed that what was going on in Russia at that time, that was not even a completed revolution, was really going to define in many ways what was going to go on the rest of the 20th century? Mary knew. Mary knew. And she is going to speak to that very clearly and very directly in her apparitions. Who are the visionaries? All right. Again, this Lourdes is in Portugal. It was a small village, mostly peasants. The three children, their parents are farming. These kids are shepherding. That is what they are out doing whenever these apparitions take place. The visionary who is most well known and who is the one that lived up until 2009 is Lucia, Lucia de Santos. And she was 10 years old at the time. And she is the one who is going to do all the writing and speaking, and we'll see why when we come to a little bit more of the story. The other two were actually a brother and sister who were cousins of Lucia. They were Francisco and Jacinta Marto. Francisco, little boy, is 9 years old. Again, Lucia was 10. Jacinta is the youngest, and she is 7. Now, when we come to the apparitions, Lucia is going to play the most important part. She is going to be the only one who actually speaks to Mary. The others will be there, but they will not speak. Francisco could only see. He could not hear the messages that Mary was giving. And Jacinta could both see and hear, but she never spoke. In the spring of 1916, the children are grazing their sheep, and these are the words of Lucia. Suddenly they see a young man, about 14 or 15 years old, whiter than snow, transparent as crystal when the sun shines through it, and of great beauty. This is an angel, a young angel. And the angel's words, as are always the first words of an angel when they show up, do not be afraid, because the experience of meeting someone from the other world, all right, is almost always one of fear and of awe. Do not be afraid. I am an angel of peace. Pray with me. The angel then knelt down and he bowed with his forehead all the way down onto the ground. And he taught them a prayer on the handout. The first prayer on the handout is the prayer that he taught them. And he taught them that they were to pray this prayer 3 times in a row. This is known as the pardon prayer, or sometimes the angel prayer. My God, I believe, I adore, I hope, and I love you. I ask pardon of you for those who do not believe, do not adore, do not hope, and do not love. All right, so he's going to teach them that, and they're to say it 3 times over. They will then do this prayer 3 times over, over and over and over and over and over. When they are together out in the fields, this is one of the prayers that they are going to pray, along with the rosary, that they are going to pray repetitively. And in this prayer, we're already seeing a great deal of what is going to be the request of the Blessed Mother, which is prayer for sinners. Prayer for sinners. It's not just simply that we need to pray for ourselves. It is very much that we need to pray for sinners who are in great danger of being lost. And so the angel is there and he prays this prayer 3 times. The children also kneel down. They put their foreheads down to the ground as they are praying. And then the angel disappeared. That is in the spring of 1916. The kids were not keeping a diary. They didn't have exactly dates on these apparitions of the angels, of the angel. The second apparition took place sometime in the summer of 1916. This one takes place at a well, which is near the Santos home. That's Lucia's home. The angel appeared to the children, and the angel says, pray. Pray very much. The hearts of Jesus and Mary have designs of mercy on you. Offer prayers and sacrifices constantly to the Most High. Make of everything you can a sacrifice. This is another major theme of what we are going to be hearing, not only from the angel, but also from the Blessed Mother, about offering sacrifice. Offering sacrifice, again, not only for our own salvation, but most especially for what Mary refers to as poor sinners who are in danger of hell. Offer prayers and sacrifices constantly to the Most High. Make of everything you can a sacrifice and offer it to God as an act of reparation for the sins by which he is offended and in supplication for the conversion of sinners. You will thus draw down peace upon your country. Now listen to this. I am its angel guardian, the angel of Portugal. All right. It seems that God not only gives guardian angels to individuals, but that he has also given guardian angels to nations. In the book of Daniel, I think it is, the Saint Michael is identified as the patron saint, the guardian angel of Israel. All right. And so what this seems to indicate is that all nations have a guardian angel. I am its guardian angel, the angel of Portugal. Above all, accept and bear with submission the suffering which the Lord will send to you. Again, another theme we're going to hear. Mary's going to ask the kids a number of times, will you accept whatever suffering the Lord chooses to send into your life for the sake of the salvation of sinners? so then the angel disappears. The third angel apparition took place somewhere the end of September, early October 1916. So on the same hillside as the first time when he appeared to them, they were praying the pardon prayer over and over. And looking up, the angel was there. This time he's holding a chalice. All right, he's holding a chalice, and hovering over the chalice is a host, all right, Eucharistic host. Drops of blood are dripping from the host into the chalice. The angel sets the chalice down, and then kneels down before it, all right, and then the children kneel down with him, and they bow profoundly, again going down all the way with their foreheads onto the ground in adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. The angel then teaches them a new prayer, which he told them to say three times. That prayer is also on the sheet that that you have there, the prayer taught by the angel, fall of 1916. Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, I adore you profoundly, and I offer you the most precious body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, present in all the tabernacles of the world, in reparation for the outrages, sacrileges, and indifference with which he himself is offended. And through the infinite merits of his most sacred heart, and the Immaculate Heart of Mary, I beg of you the conversion of poor sinners. All right? Again, a prayer that is honoring God and praying for poor sinners. So they pray this three times. And then something very interesting happens. He gives communion to them. So he gives, first of all, the host to Lucia. At this point, Lucia is the only one of the three who has made her first Holy Communion. So he does not give her the host, but the others the host, but he does allow them to drink from the cup. And so Francisco and Jacinta make their first communion out on the hillside, being given communion by the angel. The angel says to them, take and drink the body and blood of Jesus Christ, horribly outraged by ungrateful men. Make reparation for their crimes and console your God. The angel and the children bowed profoundly, said the new prayer three times. The angel disappeared. All right, and that is the last time that we're going to see the angel until at the very end. The end, very end, they will see the angel again. The following year, on May 13th, 1917, is when the first of the Marian apparitions take place. One of the things that has happened, Pope Benedict XV has been trying to negotiate a peace between the two sides in World War I, with no success whatsoever. They are locked in. They are locked into this war, and he has had no success whatsoever. So he asks Catholics throughout the world, and especially in Europe, to join him in praying a novena for peace. It is on the eighth day of this novena that had been requested by Benedict XV that the children are in what is called the Cove d'Iria, which means the Cove of Irene or the Cove of Peace. They are shepherding. They are the sheep. And while they're playing there, the children see a flash of light. And there is what is referred to as a holm oak tree. I can only guess that that's a small oak tree of some kind. And that the children see hovering over this tree a lady in white. Lucia later described it. These are her words. She was more brilliant than the sun and radiated light more clear and intense than a crystal glass filled with sparkling water when the rays of the burning sun shine through it. She appeared to be about 17 years old. She wore a mantle and a tunic that seemed to be made of light. Around her neck was a cord with a little ball of light. There was a star near the bottom of her tunic, and she's holding a rosary which shone like stars, and the crucifix was the most radiant of all the rosary. And the lady says to them, do not be afraid, because the most reasonable thing at this moment is to be afraid. Do not be afraid, I will do you no harm. Lucia then says, where are you from? The lady says, I am from heaven. Lucia, what do you want from me? This is something we're going to hear Lucia ask in all of the apparitions. What do you want of me? The lady said, told them that they were to return on the 13th of each month for the next 6 months. Later, I will tell you who I am and what I want. Afterward, I will return here yet a seventh time. Then Lucia asked a question. Will we all three go to heaven? Very interesting response. Yes, but Francisco must first say many rosaries. Seems he was a little devil of some kind. I'm not sure exactly what that was all about, but she says yes, but Francisco must say many rosaries. It is then that the lady asks, because they don't, she has not identified herself. They're pretty sure they know who this is, but she has not referred, told them who she is, so they continue to refer to her as the lady. The lady says, are you willing to offer yourselves to God and bear all the sufferings he wills to send you as an act of reparation for the sins by which he is offended, and of supplication for the conversion of sinners? Now just, are you willing to accept, to offer yourselves to God and bear all the sufferings he wills to send to you? Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to do that? I think we really want to be hesitant before we say that. Now here's the thing. Sufferings are going to come. Sufferings are going to come. I don't know that God is going to send us more sufferings if we say yes. The issue is, will we accept what sufferings come or will we not? You know, there's a saying I heard a long many years ago that when we accept the cross in our lives, whatever form that cross takes, it shapes us and forms us in holiness. It makes us into saints. When we try to reject the suffering that comes into our lives, when we seek to reject the crosses that may come into our lives, they don't go away, but they end up crushing us. The sufferings that we don't accept are the ones that crush us. Suffering will come. And so what she is teaching them, she is teaching us, is that when the sufferings come, we accept them and we offer them up to God as an act of reparation for sins by which he is offended and a supplication for the conversion of sinners. The children say, yes, we are willing. The lady then said, then you are going to have much to suffer. First of all, they're going to suffer a great deal just simply because of dealing with these apparitions and what that's going to cost as they go forward. But the grace of God will be your comfort. She also told them, pray the rosary every day. Every day. Lucia then writes, Our Lady opened her hands for the first time, communicating to us a light so intense that it streamed from her hands. As it streamed from her hands, its rays penetrated our hearts and the innermost depths of our souls, making us see ourselves in God, who was the light, more clearly than we see ourselves in the best of mirrors. Then moved by an interior impulse that was also communicated to us, we fell on our knees, repeating in our hearts, almost Holy Trinity, I adore you. My God, I love you in the most blessed sacrament. She then left them. She then left them. When they get up and they're getting ready to go home, Lucia is saying, let's not tell anybody about this, all right? But the Martos kids want to go home and they want to tell their parents, all right? Lucia has a good reason for not wanting anybody to know. Francisco and Jacinta have good reason for feeling very okay with this. The Martos children tell their parents, who instantly believe them, all right? Instantly believe them, are going to support them through this entire process. When Lucia's mother hears about it, Lucia does not tell her about it. She hears it from, I guess, the Martos. She doesn't believe it for a moment. She thinks the kids are either lying or that they are imagining this, that they have lost their mind. She is really angry, and she is going to stay angry about this. She is not going to be happy about this up until the very end. And we had somebody ask me earlier today, when did she become convinced that it was true? The same time everybody else did, when the sun danced. That was, until then, she did not believe it. Until then, she thought that Lucia was just doing this for attention, or that there was something even more seriously wrong with her than that. So Lucia did not want this. So, she has told them, come every month on the 13th. It begins on May, June 13th. The three come to the Cove to Iria. There are about 50 people who have heard about this, who join them. Some of them believe it. Some people think it's crazy, but hey, you know, I got nothing else to do today. You know, so let's go see what's going to happen at the Cove. The children are praying, and they see a light coming toward them, and then they see the lady over the home oak tree. Lucia, what do you want me to do? The same question we hear over and over. The lady, return on July 13th, pray the rosary every day, and then she says something interesting to Lucia. Learn to read and write. learned to read and write, but she had not. She was just a little peasant girl. She had not learned to read and write. Why would she need to learn to read and write? She's going to be the apostle. She's going to be the one that the Lord is going to use, that Mary is going to use to get this message out. She will eventually write, I think it's 3 memoirs. She will dialoguing through letters with popes and bishops and many other people. And so it is going to be very important for her to learn to read and write. So right from the very beginning, we see that Mary is preparing her for what is going to be a very long task that she is going to have. Again, she lives to be 97 years old. Lucia, will you take all 3 of us to heaven? And very dramatic response, yes, I will take Jacinta and Francisco soon. Both are going to die within 2 years. Francisco within 2 years, Jacinta within 4 years. Just after World War II ends, as if Europe and the world have not gone through enough, there is going to be the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu is going to, and 20 million people worldwide are going to die during this pandemic of flu that is going to hit the world. And 2 of those are going to be these Martos children. It's going to be Francisco and Jacinta. So they are going to die soon. But you, Lucia, you are to stay here sometime longer. Jesus wishes to make use of you to make me known and loved. He wanted to establish the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. Now, interestingly enough, Jacinta and Francisco are happy because they can't wait to go to heaven. All right? Now, having met Mary, they're not scared of heaven at all. They're just like, hey, I want to die. I want to go to heaven. There's a story that's told of Francisco that somebody comes and you know, again, he's a little boy. He's a little boy, about 9 years old. And so he said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Are you going to be a baker? No, ma'am. No, ma'am. Are you going to be a farmer? No, ma'am. No, ma'am. Well, what is it that you want to do? I want to die and go to heaven. All right? And this is what this is. Can you imagine a 9-year-old telling you that? We need to give this kid some help. But he knew what he wanted. He knew what he wanted. He had met Mary, and he wanted to be in heaven. He knew where the good stuff was. So, and then Lucia says, will I be alone after they go to heaven? And the lady says, no, my daughter. Are you suffering because of this? Don't lose heart. I will never forsake you. My Immaculate Heart will be your refuge and the way that will lead you to God. These are important words for those of us who are Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish. And as we listen to this, we understand what it means, you know, for us to be the Immaculate Heart of Mary. It's going to be in reflecting on her words and her requests at Fatima. They're going to most illuminate that. My Immaculate Heart will be your refuge in the way that will lead you to God. The lady opens her hands and the 3 are surrounded by light. I saw the lady's heart surrounded by piercing thorns, representing the offenses committed against her that needed reparation. The children were eager to offer the reparation. And then she vanishes. We then come to July 13th. Now, there are 2 of the apparitions that are the most important of all. And that is July 13th, and which is when we're going to hear all of the messages. This is going to get involved as we spend our time primarily with July 13th. And October 13th, which of course is the final apparition, which again is when the sun danced. But it is here on July 13th that we hear about the so-called secrets, the so-called 3 secrets of Fatima. There are actually 3 visions that Mary is going to give to the children. Last month there were 50. There are now approximately 4,000 people gathered at the grove praying the rosary. The lady appearing over the holm oak tree. Lucia, what do you want of me? The lady, return on August 13th, pray the rosary daily. And she added, in honor of Our Lady of the Rosary, because only she can help you. Lucia, I would like you to tell us who you are and to work a miracle so that everybody, especially my mom, will believe that you are appearing to us. And the lady, in October, I will reveal my identity and perform a miracle to help people believe the apparitions are real. She then gives the children a vision of hell, all right? And I'm going to read that to you, and it is a hellish vision of hell, all right? It is intended to be shocking. It is intended to be disturbing. It is intended to scare the bejesus out of us, all right, so that we will do whatever it takes, first of all, so that we don't end up there, and that we will be willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that no one else ends up there. So, these are the words, again, taken directly from Lucia as she describes this. The lady opens her hands, and light comes forth. The rays of light seem to penetrate the earth, and we saw, as it were, a sea of fire. Plunged in this fire were demons and souls in human form, like transparent burning embers, all blackened or burnished bronze, floating about in the conflagration. Now raised into the air by the flames that issued from within themselves, together with great clouds of smoke, now falling back on every side like sparks in huge fires, without weight or equilibrium, amid shrieks and groans of pain and despair, which horrified us and made us tremble with fear. The demons could be distinguished by their terrifying and repellent likeness to frightful and unknown animals, black and transparent like burning coals. Terrified, and as if to plead for comfort, we looked up at the lady who said to us so kindly and so sadly, "You have seen hell, where the souls of poor sinners go. To save them, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved, and there will be peace." All right? If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved, and there will be peace. Now, is this a literal image of what hell actually looks like? And the church would say no. This is very much a figurative image. The church teaches that hell is not so much a place as it is a state of being. It is a state of being separated from God. It is a spiritual state, but we have to use what we know. You know, we human beings have to use the images that we possess because we, you know, have a hard time imagining what living in a non-physical and non-material world might look and feel like. But he's trying to describe the absolute despair, the absolute terror and pain, not physical pain, but spiritual pain, of being eternally separated from God. Because it is only union with God is the only true happiness that exists. And we have false joys in this life, false happinesses in this life. In the next world, we won't have those distractions. Right? There will be union with God, and there will be no union with God. There will be heaven, which is union with God, and there will be hell, which is not union with God. And not being in union with God for eternity is going to be horrible. All right? Not because God... See, it's our faith really makes clear, God does not condemn anyone to hell. It is not God's will, it is not God's plan that anyone will end up in hell. Those who go to hell condemn themselves. All right, we heard this, I think, this past Sunday in the gospel where it was saying, you know, that it was talking about faith, all right, having God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever should believe in him may not perish but might have eternal life. And it talks about those who believe will be saved. He says those who do not believe will be condemned. But they are condemned by their lack of faith because they refuse to respond to the invitation. God is not going to condemn them. They condemn themselves by refusing to respond to the offer of salvation and the offer of love that God is offering. It is not God's plan. It is not God's will. That's why she comes, all right? And she is saying, this image, these physical images of fire and of the demons and the horrors that are there are intended to give us a sense of how horrific hell is going to be. And now we live in a world, in our own church, you know, there are a lot of people, whenever I preach about hell, there are people, I can't imagine that this is, and I understand. I would love to believe that there is no hell. I would love to believe there is no hell. Because if there is a hell, I really have to take seriously the possibility that I could end up there. And I also have to take very seriously that people I love can end up there. All right? Well, that's exactly what Mary wants us to take seriously. She wants to take seriously that we could end up in hell. And that people that you and I know and love could end up in hell. And she wants us to be willing to do whatever it takes not to end up in hell, and to do whatever it takes to make sure that no one else ends up in hell. She wants each and every one of us to take responsibility in our prayer, in the offerings of our sacrifices, to make sure that no one ever ends up in hell. All right? That's why she came. That's what this is about. That is the first vision. That is the first secret that is revealed to them, is this vision of hell. The second one, this is the lady speaking. She said, "If what I say to you is done," this is after they've seen this vision of hell, "many souls will be saved and there will be peace." The war is going to end. The war is going to end. This is incredibly good news for the people of this time. The war is going to end. But if people do not cease offending God, a worse one will break out during the pontificate of Pius the 11th. Now, she probably did not use the word, the name Pius the 11th. Lucia is writing this down in the 1940s, all right? And so we've already, so she is saying it's the next pope, but Lucia actually gives that next pope the name, Pius the 11th. "When you see a knight," she goes on, and so, of course, we know what the worst war coming is going to be. It's going to be World War II. And she says, "When you see a night illumined by an unknown light, know that this is the great sign given by God that he is about to punish the world for its crimes by means of war, famine, and persecution to the church and of the Holy Father." Now, World War I would end the following year in 1918. In 1937, just before the Second World War begins, on January 25th and 1920, and January 25th and 26th of 1937, there is going to be an extraordinary aurora borealis that is going to illuminate the skies of Europe and part of America for 2 nights. For 2 nights, the sky is going to be lit with this aurora borealis. Lucia, who is now a nun, she is a Carmelite nun, believed that this was the sign that she had been told about. And that was the warning. "When you see a night illumined by an unknown light, know that this is the great sign given by God." World War II in Europe officially begins on September 1st, 1939, with the invasion of Poland. So she is speaking about there. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. She is saying that this is going to happen if people do not respond. If people do not respond. She goes on and she says, "I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart and the communion of reparation on the first Saturdays. If my requests are heeded, Russia will be converted and there will be peace. If not, she will spread her errors throughout the world, causing wars and persecutions of the church." Now, does that sound like the 20th century to you? All right? Does that sound like as good a summary of the 20th century as you can come up with? "If my requests are heeded, Russia will be converted, and there will be peace. If not, she will spread her errors throughout the world, causing wars and persecution of the church. The good will be martyred. The Holy Father will have much to suffer. Various nations will be annihilated." Various nations will be annihilated. She goes on, "In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph." Those are important words. Those are important words. Maybe the most important words that we want to remember from Fatima. "In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, and she will be converted, and a period of peace will be granted to the world. In Portugal, the dogma of the faith will always be preserved." So let's talk about this consecration of Russia, all right? She is going to communicate this, first of all, to Pope Pius XII, is who she's, during the 1940s, she's going to give this in writing, she's going to put this down in writing and give it to Pope Pius XII. And I think it was 1942, he is actually going to do a prayer of consecration to of Russia. But Lucia herself is going to say this was not a fulfillment of what the, Our Lady asked, because it asked that bishops around the world join the Holy Father in doing this. He did not ask others to do it. He did this very privately. Part of this was because World War II was going on, and everything that was going on, and the difficulties they were already having in dealing with Russia and with Stalin, and they did not really want to provoke him any further. So they did not do anything more. Lucia herself said that that was not a fulfillment of the consecration. Pope John Paul II, of course, being the great Mary Pope, will decide that he is going to do a consecration of Russia, and he is calling on the bishops all throughout the world to join him on March 25th, 1984. March 25th, of course, is the Feast of the Annunciation, exactly 9 months before Christmas. This coming Sunday is actually the official date of the Feast of the Annunciation, but it will be, because it's the fourth Sunday of Lent, we will actually celebrate that on Monday. But on March 25th, 1984, Pope John Paul was at St. Mary Major, one of the four major basilicas in Rome, and he had written a prayer that bishops throughout the world were to pray, consecrating the whole world to Mary, including Russia. All right. Now, did that have any impact? Did this have any impact? Okay, let's talk about what took place. This happened in March of 1984. Did anything else significant happen in March of 1984? Well, in Russia at that time, the leader of Russia was a man whose name was Konstantin Chernenko, who was a very hardline communist. That month, March 1984, a man named Mikhail Gorbachev became head of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Soviet Union. In March of 1985, 1 year after the consecration of Russia, Gorbachev became General Secretary of the Communist Party. He began in the Soviet Union what was known as Perestroika. Remember Perestroika? The restructuring. And something else that he called Glasnost, all right, which was a new openness. And he also increased religious freedom. These are pulling the pins, all right, that are going to eventually lead to the downfall of the Soviet Union. So that's March 1985. So that's 1 year after the consecration. So some things are already starting to happen. On August 22nd, 1991, does anybody know what August 22nd is? It's the Feast of the Queenship of Mary. The Feast of the Queenship of Mary. And on August 22nd, 1991, was when there was an attempted coup by the military leaders against Gorbachev. Do you remember that? When they tried to overthrow, they just saw the whole thing falling apart, and it failed. And the failure of the coup really kickstarted the collapse of the Soviet Union. On the Feast of the Queenship of Mary, on December 25th, that same year, Christmas Day, get this, Christmas Day, 1991, the red flag with a hammer and sickle, which is the flag of the Soviet Union, is lowered for the last time. And the national flag of Russia was raised. Within 7 years of the consecration of Russia to Mary, the Soviet Union had fallen. The Soviet Union is no more. Now, we all know that Russia is still a mess, all right? But so is the United States. So, okay, let's just be honest about the whole thing. You know, the world's a mess, and so we can't expect them to be to have turned into some kind of idyllic nation. Until we do that, we can't expect that of anyone else. This was the second secret. This is the second secret. The third secret. Now, this is the one that was kept secret until a few years ago. This is the one that there has been buzz about. There have been novels written about this. People speculating to no end about what took place in the third secret. The first one was the vision of hell. The second are the warnings about the World War II and the evils of communism. The third secret was publicly announced by the church at the beatification of Jacinta and Francisco on May 13th, 2000. And on the handout, you have the exact text. Translated from Portuguese into English. This is the text of the secret given to the three children on July 13, 1917, written by Lucia on January 3, 1944. Again, this was a vision. This is a vision. It was not words that were given to her. These are her words describing what they saw. I write in obedience to you, my God, who command me to do so, through His Excellency, the Bishop of Laeria, who I'm guessing is the Bishop of the diocese in which her convent existed, and through her most holy mother, your most holy mother and mine. Here's the secret. After the two parts, which I have already explained, at the left of Our Lady, and a little above, we saw an angel with a flaming sword in his left hand. Flashing, it gave out flames that looked as though they would set the world on fire. But they died out in contact with the splendor that Our Lady radiated toward him from her right hand. Pointing to the earth with his right hand, the angel cried out in a loud voice, "Penance, penance, penance." And we saw in an immense light that is God something similar to how people appear in a mirror when they pass in front of it. A bishop dressed in white, we had the impression that it was the Holy Father. Our other bishops, priests, men and women, religious, going up a steep mountain, at the top of which there was a big cross of rough-hewn trunks as of a cork tree with the bark. Before reaching there, the Holy Father passed through a big city, half in ruins and half trembling with halting step. Afflicted with pain and sorrow, he prayed for the souls of the corpses he met on his way. Having reached the top of the mountain, on his knees at the foot of the big cross, he was killed by a group of soldiers who fired bullets and arrows at him. And in the same way, there died one after another the other bishops, priests, men and women religious, and various lay people of different ranks and positions. Beneath the two arms of the cross, there were two angels, each with a crystal aspersorium in his hand, in which they gathered up the blood of the martyrs, and with it sprinkled the souls that were making their way to God. Okay? So, now, she writes this down in 1944, but she told them that it should not be opened yet. It should not be opened until 1960. In 1960, Pope John the 23rd is Pope, and the secret is brought to him, and he opens it. The reports are that he blanched when he saw this, and he was just aghast by the description of what is going on, and that he determined that it was not in the interest of the world and of the church at that time to release this. Now, it was not, as I understand it, Mary who said it should be opened in 1960, but it was Lucia. That's what I was reading, that Lucia said don't open it until then. But there's no clear message that I can find that said that this came directly from Mary, that in 1960 it should be opened and then broadcast to the world. John 23rd said, no, this should not be broadcast. This is just too troubling. And what are people going to do with it? What are people going to do with this message if we get this out there? You know, there's just way too many ways to misinterpret and misunderstand this. And so he said he was not going to do that. Paul VI, after he is elected Pope, reads it. He agrees. This is not something we need to release. Paul II, when he is elected, and he reads it very soon after he is elected Pope, and he decides at that time that it is not an opportune time to do this. It will not be until the year 2000 that he is going to determine that this needs to be put out. So, when the church put this out in the year 2000, when they released this, they said, we can't just release this. We also have to try to help people to understand what this is about. And so there was a theological reflection on the third secret that was written by an insignificant theologian in the Vatican by the name of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. All right? Who has since become Pope Benedict XVI. And in his theological reflection, he writes, to save souls has emerged as a key word of the first and second parts of the secret. All right, the vision of hell and the vision of what of World War II and of communism. The same souls has emerged as a key word of the first and second parts of the secret. And the key word of the third part is the threefold cry, penance, penance, penance. The beginning of the gospel comes to mind. Repent and believe the good news. To understand the signs of the time means to accept the urgency of penance, of conversion, of faith. This is the correct response to this moment of history, characterized by the grave perils outlined in the images that follow. Allow me to add a personal recollection. He has actually met Sister Lucia. He has actually gone to her Carmelite convent and has met with her. In a conversation with me, Sister Lucia said that it appeared ever more clearly to her that the purpose of the apparitions was to help people to grow more and more in faith, hope, and love. Everything else was intended to lead to this. This is the purpose. This is why Mary came, was to help people grow in faith, hope, and love. Conversion, repentance, holiness. The future is not, in fact, unchangeably set. And the image which the children see is in no way a film preview of a future in which nothing can be changed. So what they're seeing here, this image, is not given as this is something that is absolutely going to happen. This is, as with the other visions, this is what will happen unless the world listens to me. Unless the world listens to me, this is what is going to happen. But the whole purpose is to change that. The purpose of showing us hell is to make sure we don't end up there. The purpose of the messages about World War II and Russia are to make sure that they do not happen. The same thing is here. This is not a preview of a future in which nothing can be changed. Indeed, the whole point of the vision is to bring freedom onto the scene and to steer freedom in a positive direction. The purpose of the vision is not to show a film of an irrevocably fixed future. Its meaning is exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. So let's examine the the vision itself. Let's go through what it says took place. First of all, they see the angel with the fiery sword. And the flames, they were afraid, are going to consume the earth. The earth itself is, this is World War II. This is World War I, World War II. This is communism. This is all the sin and all of the horrors of the world that are threatening to destroy the world in the 20th century. This is what they see. And then they see Mary. Mary, and from her right hand comes out glory, the glory of God, which holds back the destruction, the fire, in order, this is why Mary has come, is to save the world from itself, to save the world from itself. She sees the Holy Father making his way in this, along with other bishops and priests and religious and laity on this this horrific way of the cross, going through a city that is half in ruins and then up a mountain. Cardinal Ratzinger says that this represents the whole history of the human race and of the church making its way through the world in a world that is filled with sin and suffering. It is human history itself. The Pope comes to the top of the mountain, and there is a cross, and he is at the foot of the cross, and he is killed. He is killed. Now there are those who say, first of all, that John Paul, Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict, and all the other Vatican officials that were involved in this lied about this whole thing. That this is not, in fact, the third secret. That they did not want to release the third secret, which some say was saying that the Second Vatican Council was going to be a heretical council that was going to lead the church into apostasy. All right. There are others who said that it is a prediction of a horrific nuclear holocaust. But they do not believe this. You know, they are real fringe groups in the church. Some of you may be familiar with them. I get a mailing every month, or quarterly perhaps, of the Fatima Crusader, all right, which is Father Nick Gruner. Are any of you familiar with him at all? Actually, I knew Father Nick Gruner. Father Nick Gruner at one time was exploring, when I was in seminary at St. Pius X Seminary in Erlanger, Nick Gruner was looking for a diocese. He was not yet ordained, all right? He had gone through seminary really on his own and was looking for a diocese. He's from Canada, and he lived at the seminary for one semester. He also taught at St. Henry High School. I don't know if anybody was here and maybe had him in religion class back in the early 1970s when that was going on. And but he was teaching religion there for a semester, and so he lived with us. At that point, he decided, and I think Bishop Ackerman decided, that this was not going to be a good fit. He eventually found an attack Italian bishop who ordained him, but then he refused to stay in that diocese and insisted that he was being called by Mary to this very special ministry. He has been suspended. He is the main driver behind a lot of these conspiracy theories and disparaging John Paul II. And it was interesting when John Paul was still alive, and you would read what he would have to say. And he really kind of tried to admire John Paul, even though John Paul is the one that's signing off on this. But he was saying that it really wasn't John Paul. It was really this evil mastermind who was in the Vatican, whose name was Cardinal Ratzinger. All right, and I just thought, I wonder what he felt on the day in which it was announced that Ratzinger was now Pope Benedict. All right. Anyway. But this is, I don't want to go into a lot of all that, but here's what Cardinal Ratzinger says about the fact that in the vision, the Pope is killed. Obviously, Pope John Paul II was not. But John Paul II is going to see the assassination attempt on himself as the fulfillment of this secret. Again, remembering that the vision is not given as an irrevocable promise that this is what's going to happen, but with the intention that with prayer and sacrifice that this not happen. This is Cardinal Ratzinger. In the vision, the Pope too is killed along with the martyrs. When after the attempted assassination on May 13, 1981, the Holy Father had the text of the third part of the secret brought to him, was it not inevitable that he should see in it his own fate? He had been very close to death, and he himself explained his survival in the following words. It was a mother's hand that guided the bullet's path, and in his throes, the Pope halted at the threshold of death. That here, a mother's hand had deflected the fateful bullet only shows once more that there is no immutable destiny, that faith and prayer are forces which can influence history. Listen to this. I just think this is incredible. This is incredible. This is our Pope 10 years before he became Pope, or some years before he became Pope. But I think, wow, that faith and prayer are forces which can influence history, and that in the end, prayer is more powerful than bullets and faith more powerful than armies. Is that not an awesome statement? Is that not an awesome statement? Prayer and faith are forces which can influence history, and in the end, prayer is more powerful than bullets, and faith more powerful than armies. There's a story that during the, I think it was during the 1940s or the early 50s, when Pope Pius XII was Pope, and Joseph Stalin was the leader of the Soviet Union, that of course there was a great conflict between the Church and the Soviet Union, and the Pope had made some kind of a statement critical of communism. And this was reported to Joseph Stalin. And Joseph Stalin's reaction was, what do I care? How many divisions does the Pope have? I'm not scared of the Pope. But of course, where is Joseph Stalin? Probably in hell, all right? But where are his successors? The Soviet Union's gone. Where's the Pope? The successor of Peter, the successor of Pius XII, is still doing quite well. He's doing quite well. So, what a great statement. I was so struck as I was reading that. I was like, oh my gosh, that is so powerful. Something to take from that. Again, it is saying that this vision of the Pope being killed is not an irrevocable truth. It is something that is intended by prayer and sacrifice to be changed. And John Paul believes that it was. He will, after his recovery, he will go to make a pilgrimage to Fatima, and he will take the bullet, right, that was removed from him, and he will put that into the crown that is on the statue of Mary that is there in Fatima. He has consecrated that to her. Now, some very, very important points here, as if all of this is not important enough, but what day did the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II take place? May 13th, the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, the day on which the first apparition took place. That is the day on which the assassination took place in the piazza of St. Peter, all right? And then it talks about, remember, it talks about the angels who are collecting the blood of the martyrs. Right? Now, this calls to mind the great teaching by Tertullian, one of the early church fathers, that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. Right? And historically, this is what has happened. Whenever the church is persecuted, she gets stronger and she grows. She gets stronger and she grows. Not just that she grows spiritually, she tends to grow in numbers. Right? When she is being persecuted and she is facing martyrdom, instead of everybody saying, I don't want to do that, more people are saying, listen, I don't know what they got, but I want what they got. I want the kind of faith that they have. I want the kind of life they have. And so people begin to follow more fully and more completely than ever before. And then when the church is comfortable, she tends to get corrupt, she tends to get lazy, and she tends to shrink. Look at Europe. The church has been shrinking there, and a lot of it is simply because it's too easy. It's too easy to be Catholic. Therefore, what's the point of being Catholic? All right. The United States is not as much. All right. Actually, the Catholic Church is still growing in the United States. But I think it's very important for us to understand why it is growing. It is primarily growing because of Catholic immigrants coming from Mexico and other Central American countries. At this point, the Catholic Church in the United States is 1/3 immigrant, all right, from Central and South Central America and Mexico. These are some of our most important brothers and sisters. If it was just left of the church of those who were born here, all right, or kind of naturalized Catholics, we would have gone downhill. Not nearly as much as Europe has, but significantly. And so, but it's still, a faith is still growing in America because of the faith of these brothers and sisters of ours from the South. We need to love them. We need to welcome them. That's the end of the three seasons. That is the big day. That is the biggest one. On August 19th and September 13th, on August 13th, they were not able to come because they were in jail. All right, they were locked up. But she appeared to them on the 19th. All right, on September the 13th, she appeared to them. I'm not going to go into those; are not terribly significant appearances. I want to get to the final one, October the 13th, 1917. Now, remember, we started; there were 50 people there. Then there were 4,000 people there. On 1917, there are estimates there were 80 to 90,000 people that were gathered in the Fatima itself, and then a lot of people who couldn't get that close within a radius of about 25 miles. So we're talking about 80, 90,000 people. The three come to the cove. The lady appears. Lucia, what do you want of me? The lady, I want to tell you that a chapel is to be built here in my honor. She likes to have people build churches, all right? It just seems like wherever she goes, people, what do you want? Why don't you build a church? This sounds like a good idea. And then she identifies herself. This is the first time she's identifies herself. I am the Lady of the Rosary. Continue always to pray the Rosary every day. The war is going to end, and the soldiers will soon return to their homes. Lucia is, the people as the kids are coming into the cove. They're having to make their way through this massive crowd. And people are saying, ask the Blessed Mother for this and ask her this. And so Lucia presents the people's petitions as best she can. And the lady says, these are some important words for us to hear. But the lady says that those who seek blessings from God must first ask for forgiveness for their sins and reform their lives. If I want God to listen to me, I need first to listen to God. All right? If I want to come and ask God to bless me, I have to be willing to be sorry for my sins and seek forgiveness and to reform my life. Those are powerful words too. The lady then says, do not offend the Lord our God anymore because he is already so much offended. The lady begins to leave, and Lucia looks up at the sun. And the three, at that point, see St. Joseph with the child Jesus, and Our Lady, robed in white with a blue mantle, standing beside the sun. St. Joseph and the child Jesus appeared to bless the world, for they traced the sign of the cross with their hands. And a little while later, this apparition disappeared, and then they saw another, which is our Lord Jesus, who is now as an adult, not as a child, and Our Lady. It seemed to me that it was Our Lady of Dolores, of Sorrows. Our Lord appeared to bless the world in the same manner as St. Joseph had done. This apparition also vanished, and I saw Our Lady once more, this time resembling Our Lady of Carmel. It is then that Lucia cries out, "Look at the sun, look at the sun." And we come to the miracle of the sun, the day the sun danced. And what did I do with the book I have here? Did I take that back in the office? I'm going to have to go back and get that. Go back in the sacristy first, Josiah, and if it's not there, then go into my office, and it should be on my desk, all right? It's a book called about Fatima. It says Fatima on the book. I apologize. I thought I had that with me beforehand, but I went in to make some notes before, so I don't have that. Anyway, they are looking up. They are looking up, and we'll get to some actual descriptions that are given by people who were there, including Francisco and Jacinta's father. Backing up a little bit, I told you that Lucia's mother has not bought into this at all, and she still doesn't, though she comes to the cove on this day. And people ask her, "Why are you coming if you don't believe it?" She said, "Because I think there will not be a miracle, and that they are going to, the crowd is going to get very angry, and they're going to attack my child. And whether I believe her or not, I'm going to be there to protect my child." So Lucia, her mother was there for her, even though she did not believe what had happened. But here I'm going to give you some descriptions of people who were there. This first is a woman whose name is Mary Allen. "As we approached the hillside upon which the appearances were supposed to have taken place, I saw a sea of people. Some newspapers said that there were 70,000 people there. I didn't count, but it was more people than I had ever seen in my life, even to this day. We had just arrived there when suddenly my attention was drawn by a sudden bright light from the heavens, lighting up the whole countryside. Suddenly the rain ceased, the clouds separated, and I saw a large sun, brighter than the sun, yet I could look at it without hurting my eyes, as if it were only the moon. The sun began to get larger and larger, brighter and brighter, until the whole heavens seemed more brightly lighted than I have ever seen it. Then the sun started spinning and shooting streams of light, which changed it to all colors of the rainbow. At the same time, it started getting bigger and bigger in the sky, as though it were headed directly for us. It looks like it's falling, all right? Everyone was frightened. We all thought it was the end of the world. Everyone threw themselves on their knees praying and screaming the acts of contrition." I'd have been right with them. "Suddenly the sun stopped spinning and returned to its place in the sky. Everyone started shouting, 'Miracle, this is a miracle.' Just then I noticed that both the ground and my clothes were bone dry." It's been raining for quite some time. "Everyone seemed to rush forward to see the children. Unfortunately, I was only able to see them at a distance." Okay, this is T. Marta, which is Francisco and Jacinta's father. The first person to believe them was their dad. "We looked easily at the sun, which for some reason did not blind us. It seemed to flicker on and off, first one way, then another. It cast its rays in many directions and painted everything in different colors, the trees, the people, the air, and the ground. But what was most extraordinary, I thought, was that the sun did not hurt our eyes. Everything was still and quiet, and everyone was looking up. Then at a certain moment, the sun appeared to stop spinning. It then began to move and to dance into the sky until it seemed to detach itself from its place and fall upon us. It was a terrible moment." One more. This is from a reporter who worked for a newspaper called El Seculo, which is a pro-government, anti-clerical newspaper with a large circulation not only in Lisbon but throughout all of Portugal. And so he has been writing articles opposing this, even though his articles, though they oppose it, are actually spreading the word and are actually one of the major reasons people are showing up from all over the place. Here's what he writes. "From the road where the vehicles were parked, where hundreds of people who had not dared to brave the mud were congregated, one could see the immense multitude turn towards the sun, which appeared free from clouds and in its zenith. It looked like a plaque of dull silver, and it was possible to look at it without the least discomfort. It might have been an eclipse which was taking place, but at that moment a great shout went up, and one could hear the spectators nearest at hand shouting, "A miracle! A miracle!" Before the astonished eyes of the crowd, whose aspect was biblical as they stood bareheaded, eagerly searching the sky, the sun trembled, made sudden and incredible movements outside all cosmic laws. The sun danced, according to the typical expression of the people. Standing on the step of an omnibus was an old man. With his face turned to the sun, he recited the creed in a loud voice. I asked who he was. I saw him afterward going up to those around him who still had their hats on and vehemently imploring them to uncover their heads before such an extraordinary demonstration of the existence of God. People then began to ask each other what they had seen. The great majority admitted to having seen the trembling and the dancing of the sun. Others affirmed that they saw the face of the Blessed Virgin. Others again swore that the sun whirled on itself like a giant wheel, and that it lowered itself to the earth as if to burn it in its rays. Some said they saw it change colors successively. All right. So there are a number of other reports of people that were there. And again, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people there. But obviously something happened. 70,000 people saw this. This is the promised sign. This is the sign that Mary promised. And she outdid herself. All right. With this one. All right. When she's like, okay, I'm going to let you know, she let us know. What takes place after this? This is the end of the apparitions. There will be some times that Lucia is going to receive personal apparitions and messages from Christ and from Mary, but essentially this ends the story of Fatima. 2 years later, on April 14th, 1919, Francisco will die, and all through his sickness, Lucia will go and visit him, and she is sad because she doesn't want him to go, and he's excited. It's like, and she said, "Are you suffering?" "Yes, but I'm offering up as reparation, and I'm going home. I'm going to heaven. And then on February 20th, 1920, less than 8 months later, Jacinta will also die, both of the Spanish flu. You feel the sadness for that family, even the kids that were excited about going to heaven. But for the family, that must have been horrible. Lucia will eventually enter a Carmelite convent in Portugal. She will, especially in the 30s and 40s, she's going to be doing a lot of writing of these memoirs. She's going to be writing back and forth to popes and to bishops and to others who are asking questions and are giving her guidance and seeking her guidance, seeking her understandings about these things. And she will die at 97 on February 13th, 2009. Just one more thing I just want to add very, very quickly before I close and just kind of open up for a couple of minutes of questions. With the five first Saturdays, all right, that she requests, all right? And what is it that we are to do on the five first Saturdays? This is a form of devotion, and we are to go to confession. She wants us to go to confession once a month. She wants us to receive Holy Communion. She wants us to pray five decades of the rosary, and as we're praying the five decades of the rosary, she asks, "Keep me company for 15 minutes while meditating on the mysteries of the rosary." And we are to do that for five Saturdays. But really what she wants us to do after those five Saturdays is do the next five first Saturdays and on and on and on. She wants us to, she's trying to teach us how to pray. That's what she's doing. She's a good mother. She's a good mother who is teaching her children how to pray. And she's teaching us that it's about prayer. It is about the Mass. It is about confession, penance, all right, and sacrifice. These are the tools. These are the weapons. These are the weapons that she gives us that can be effective in our own lives, but which is Cardinal Ratzinger tells us can change history and are more powerful than armies and bullets. So I just want to open up for a few questions before we close. Yes?
You have
A really good book. This is the best book I could possibly recommend. It's a fairly new book. It's called Fatima for Today. And it's by Father Andrew Apostoli. I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's on EWTN. You see him on, you know, he's very on there a lot. But it's a book that he wrote, I think, within the last year or so. So this is the best I've seen. All right. There's another book that I have that is about all of the apparitions. That's entitled, and I can let you know next week who the author is, but the title of the book is Those Who Saw Her. Those Who Saw Her. And in all 4 weeks, I've been using her, that book, a lot. But for this week, I took almost everything out of this book. All right? So. Okay, next week we're going to be talking about somewhat more controversial apparition, which is the apparitions at Medjugorje, and which have not yet been approved by the church. There is great controversy over them. They are the most prominent of the more modern of the apparitions. They are very influenced by Fatima. I will also be talking about two other sets of apparitions, which are more local and that have gained apparition. Approval by the church. One is Our Lady of Cabejo, which is in Rwanda, and the other one is Our Lady of Akita, which is in Japan. All right, both of these have received approval by the church, and so I will be talking about them next week as well as we wrap this up. Yes.
Do